So, it's me, Simon. I'm speaking to you from this fashionable place, Berlin, and I'm erased. I'm amazed that I lost all my traditional channels of release. So, how do I allay this tension running through my knees, through my veins? I feel I gotta make big claim to say, what can I say, people? I'm a communist and it's a sunny day, but I always feel the impact of the hay. You know, the farmers, they gotta collect the hay, and that's what we all attack as communists, that we all get exploited in the working arena. And this is simply the scene I'm setting here. But okay, before you might feel like it all disappears, like, what are you even talking about, dude? This is sheer nonsense. No, but it isn't. It's true. It's it's deep stuff, a reflection about the economic base of our lives and society. But what's up is that, you know, what we're all amazed, much more amazed than about the scientific and economic questions, is that race to find lust or love or to erase every part that's hard out of life, and every pain and step in the heart, and everything that's dark. And I'm feeling this is a plight, you know? There's a reason why they call this thing troth plight. That's when you engage and promise to get married. Because it's a plight, it's a huge sorrow, it's when you're denied all of your hollow dreams that you once swallowed, and now it gleams, it becomes possible to see. It's all illusions in vain. They won't grow like a tree. They get downcast and fall, and gotta cut them all. So that's what this system does to our dreams and our hopes and our thoughts of enlightenment and our ropes. Or there's a tightening between human bodies and minds. But no, they all have to be cut and be lying there on the earth, so we all feel alone and like wanting to cry. And that's what I want to feel. And why, people? Because this is real. Because this world is shit and people are dying in wars. And you know of it. Can read in the newspaper, but I don't recommend. So this shit is not that lit. Like, think of what else could you do with your time, like reading some poem or reciting some rhyme from Lana's songs or from whatever poet. There's nothing wrong with that, but these fucking newspapers drive me crazy. No, but because I don't need to know what the hell is going on in this hell of a world, because I know already, as a communist, I've read Marx and I've read some of the contemporary and older history, and so you get the feeling of this blistering. This is fucking hell, and we all are bent on slaying each other, people rising up and smother, whatever. What I say is that I'm so grateful to live in this world full of chaos and eradication of human enslavement, of genocides and vile wars and acts of, well, attacks, acts of, not of tenderness, but rather of the opposite, of aggression and of denigration, of violence, of oppression and of alienation, of But people, you see, clearly I'm an MC, so I get what you gotta have as a rapper that you see in me. I grow like a tree, and I know that once I see this go, like to become like G-E-Z, I know maybe in a year from now I can be him or be like, yeah, a real rapper that's lit and that's speaking of it and all things whack. Well, so I'm here at my hostel here in Berlin, later going on to some street fair of the Communist Party there. But it's a very small party and I have bigger plans. Please, dear comrades, take my hands. But I just tell you, I want to shake the whole world and not just you, you know, we're just a couple of dudes and girls, like maybe 1,000 or 2,000 organized in our party, and this is the dirt. Now, let me clear things up. The dirt of the world, that everything is so vile and bloody and chaotic, genocides going on. This is great because, you know, I don't want to fucking bother with what's going on today, which government has to say what and which war has to start there or where. No, I just know it's capitalism, it's this eternal drought, it's, yeah, people killing, enslaving each other. So this is normal life for me. And I just say, wow, as long as this goes on, I feel so alive, because then I just know it's wrong. It's wrong, it's simply wrong. And I don't need to think about, I don't need to argue with anyone, with any flop of journalists or people holding up the flag of the system, defending capitalism. I don't want to discuss or argue. I just want to say, wow, it's getting harder and harder to even live. And this is great, to feel you getting stiff, to feel the impact of life is deadening you, is dreary but okay, I think I've made my point, and just want to say, so let's take a turn and anoint this very point, this thing about politics and how whack everything is. It's all about something totally different, or is it even? It's about sex and love. That's what I want to erect and shove today. Shove it into your ears and lay the foundation of something great. But what in? So, people, you see, this world is a mess, and we're not gonna get things done by pretending that it weren't so and that it's all so nice and like being nice to each other's face. This is maybe truly a blaze. This is maybe wrong, because thereby you're simply lying to their faces. And no, to be real authentic, you'd have to be blunt and violent and be like a cunt. Yeah, use lots of these words. But there we get to the topic, the cunts and the penises. On, let's not stop it. Let's run our fingers through this book, through the thighs of and the looks, and everything's great about this book, about Shulamith Firestone's dialectic of sex. And it's written by a girl who's like to, yeah, be a little more aggressive towards men than the rest of the world. And this is her trick. This is real great. Her side is we are pricks, yeah, as men. And this is what I want to hear, and what I don't want to say it myself. I want you, women, to express this and say, wow, bad for my health. I, as a woman, will never put you on my shelf. But let me dive into that book. I'm feeling I'm rambling on here, just spitting out some words, which is beautiful too. I mean, I like to be a poet, but rather than that, I like to be a big whatever, a thinker or novelist, and just pushing to the brink there. And yeah, so let's dive into Dialectic of Sex. I have the book here right in front of me, and I'm gonna attack. I'm gonna sack on my own thoughts to go on and dive into Shulamith's raw material. And wow, this is ethereal. Callowness is a nice word. This means something like men are so shallow and callow, or callow and shallow. Okay, so I just started reading here. Thus, women who had decided not to marry because they were wise enough to look around and see where it led found that it was marry or nothing. Men gave their commitment only for a price, share shoulder his life, stand on his pedestal, become his appendage, or else be consigned forever to that limbo of chicks who mean nothing, certainly not what mother meant. Wow, this is really vile. This sounds so harsh, brutal. And yeah, I just mean, I want to express it. I want to really say there's no hope, no solution. And that's great to find this solution in capitalism, because that's when we know the grapes, they are ripe. We have to rise and make revolution. It's as simple as that, people. There's no other occlusion. Solution, but we already had that word. Be the other woman for the rest of one's life. Used to provoke his wife, prove his virility and or his independence. Discussed by his friends as his latest interesting conquest. For even if she had given up those terms and what they stood for, no male had. So what she refers to with that, I think, is the conquest. Conquest is also a bad word, which I myself, many times I heard it, and it hurt me, at least in my youth. I thought about, wow, this is news to me. I never thought about conquering a woman, but somehow it should be. So, to clear things up, Shulamith is writing this up in 76, so that's about 50 years from now. So things have changed a little bit, and I'm speaking here in 24. So I've grown up in different times, but still in capitalism. So everything's in this plight, yeah. But yeah, this conquest, interesting thing, right? So why aren't we as men conquested by one conquered? And as a slight critique, I might add here to the text that, dear girls, why you always keep on wondering what's going on in our heads? You can just talk about sex amongst yourselves and not wonder about what men keep talking about when they're among themselves. I mean, anyways, this shouldn't be that much of a thing that you should talk about it, whoever's listening, a girl or a boy. But, you know, a conquest can be also for a girl to seduce a boy, and I don't see anything bad in it, or to brag about it with your other female friends and tell them, yeah, I, as a girl, conquered that guy. And whatever. So I think just that much of the things here are not that understandable from my point of view. And I find that great. Because it's something new. We live in a new era. Things have changed, but it's only half the way. It's not full path that we've gone towards emancipation and to stay as opposites but equal between men and females. Let's go on. Yes, love means an entirely different thing to men than to women. It means ownership and control. It means jealousy, where he never exhibited it before. When she might have wanted him to, who cares if she's broke or raped until she officially belongs to him? Then he is a raging dynamo. Dynamo, a veritable cyclone, because his property, his ego extension, have been threatened. It means a growing lack of interest coupled with a roving eye. Who needs it? Sadly, women do. Okay, so let me step in here. A roving eye. Roving is a nice word. This means like the eye is wandering around looking for other girls. And Shulamith, she's making this point as a recrimination towards men and saying like, oh no, us girls, we never would let our eye wander and fall onto other men. No, it's, but what I would want to add to this text is that I like it. I like the way it's written. I read it as a provocation towards men. I don't read it as a simple fact or something that she expresses like this one-on-one, this thing that's like this and it's totally objective. No, it's subjective from her female stance, and that's great. I mean, this sentence here between the parentheses, who cares if she's broke or raped until she officially belongs to him? Then he's a raging dynamo, a veritable cyclone. And I just want to say, people, let's forget about sex and gender for a moment. I just think there's something beautiful, this jealousy and everything, to see that the other one is raging about me. So for me as a man, it would be great to have this girl at the hand who's so jealous of anything. And I mean, it works both ways is what I'm saying. Is it's just that I wish it could really work both ways and that you girls would really dare to do all the things that we do and not think that something bad would happen once you dare that, and that love would somehow stop and that it would be unerotic. We'll get to this point later, maybe Shulamith mentions it. But what I read in this sentence here is also a deep longing from the female side that the man be real jealous and that he show her this cyclone. And this vile language you're talking about, rape, so saying basically if a man is not engaged or in official relationship with a girl, he doesn't care if that girl is raped. She's maybe just a friend or just a fling he has. So whatever, she doesn't belong to him, it's not his property. So he doesn't care if she's damaged, because only once she would become his, he'd care. And he's raging and full of jealousy, and she doesn't have to look at other men. I just want to add to this that I read it as a polite, as a quest from women towards men, or from Shulamith here, towards men, saying that, well, please handle us with care as women, and you should care about us, even if we don't, if you're not yet engaged or in a relationship. But on the other hand, there's also contempt, and I think there's a huge place for contempt in sexuality that is somehow has to do with it, and somehow exactly what I experienced with my ex-girlfriend is that she wanted to be my property and wanted me to be her property, and I didn't want that. But this is exactly what Shulamith expresses here, and it's maybe just my subjective coloring from my past experience, but I feel that very strongly. It's something very romantic for women to be the possession of a man, and not so much to possess a man. It's about them to be possessed, and that, men care about them, whether they're raped or not. This is just exaggerating, but simply that a man would care about his woman like she's his property, his house. And all women complain about is that men don't care that much, like, about their cars. Like, yeah, that's always the shining star for a man, his property and possession, his nice little tool and toy. But this is what a boy feels for his car or for anything, for his football team maybe, but not for his fling, not for the girl. And I think this is the complaint that lies in there. But whatever, it's very, very subtle, and in a way this is exactly the problem, that I feel Shulamith is not talking honestly in all of this book. She's just putting out something which is good, some rage against men, but at the base she's not even touching the... But okay, no, people, she is touching very intimate stuff. It's just difficult to even become aware of anything in the sexual field, because you yourself are so immersed in your own standpoint and don't want to be deprived of sex and love. It's such a great search for all of us that we ask and look for warmth and this cuddling. And this is so great what she writes also. So this is what I'm saying. You just can't disattach yourself from your own standpoint. And as a woman or as a man, you're always going to cling on to that and feel like, ah, no, the other one is bad, or something is there in the air, all between us somehow, this trench, it's a fault, but who's to blame? I don't know. Just, it's great to let out the rage, and it's even greater from the female side. But what she writes also is a very true point, that sexuality nowadays is narrowed down to penetration, to only sex, when in reality it could be so much broader, and everything else is ignored, like who needs a hug or a kiss or anything. And this is it, this is what I need. I thought of this sometimes with some girls, that, you know, here at the reception, for example, is a beautiful girl here at the hotel. It's nice, and the hostel I'm staying in. But dude, it's always like, it's about the big thing once your eyes sting, and the big thing, love or romanticism or sex, and about this question, and this is so ugly for me. At least it feels like Shulamith is totally right, that the bigger picture is totally swiped and ignored, that there could be also shed light on this urge to simply hug and embrace the other one. And this is what I feel, that, dude, sex is, I mean, I don't even know this girl from the reception. Why would I want to have sex right away. This is such an intimate thing. But what I would like to look for and search is some human warmth, and with a person like that, with that kind and everything. Of course I would like to hug her or maybe even kiss her, but that's just that bliss there that Shulamith mentions. It's so great to just hug. And all of this greatness is ignored by today's mainstream culture. And it's about sex, it's about marketing, of course, on the billboards and the TV. We constantly are bombarded, especially men, because it's the hegemonic culture focuses on male desire. So Shulamith even goes to this point to ask if a man can even concentrate on anything else in his daily routine than thinking of sex, because yeah, he's walking the streets and he's always bombarded with that. But I think it's not exactly like that, but still an interesting question by Shulamith. It's very good to be empathetic and transform yourself mentally to the point of view of the other person or the other gender. And now let's go on here reading. So who needs this male love, right? Sadly, women do. Now she's citing Theodore Reich, a psychoanalyst. I'm following the path of Freud. Here are Reich's patients once more. She sometimes has delusions of not being persecuted by men anymore. At those times of her non-persecution mania, she is very depressed. So that's a patient of Reich, about which he wrote. All men are selfish, brutal, and inconsiderate, and I wish I could find one. We have seen that a woman needs love first for its natural enriching function, and second for social and economic reasons which have nothing to do with love. So a woman's spot in society and economy is weaker, so therefore she has to seek this economic and social security by means of love. And this, of course, is toxic, that it gets mingled into love, which should be about this feeling, the attraction between two individuals. They feel their healing when they're together, when they're seeing each other. But okay, going on. To deny her need is to put herself in an extra vulnerable spot socially and economically, as well as to destroy her emotional equilibrium, which, unlike most men's, is basically healthy. Are men worth that? Decidedly no. Most women feel that to do such tailspins for men would be to add insult to injury. They go on as before, making the best of a bad situation. If it gets too bad, they head for a usually male shrink. Okay. So, stepping into the next chapter here, chapter 7, the culture of romance. So far, we have not distinguished romance from love. For there are no two kinds of love, one healthy, dull, and one not painful. My dear, what you need is a mature love relationship. Get over this romantic nonsense. But only less than love or daily agony. When love takes place in a power context, everyone's love life must be affected, because power and love don't make it together. I don't know if that's true, but moving on. So when we talk about romantic love, we mean love corrupted by its power context. The sex class system into a diseased form of love that then in turn reinforces this sex class system. We have seen that the psychological dependence of women upon men is created by continuing real economic and social oppression. However, in the modern world, the economic and social basis of the oppression are no longer alone enough to maintain it. So the apparatus of romanticism is hauled in. Looks like we'll have to help her out, boys. So, don't really understand all this introduction here. Okay, yeah, women were oppressed, enslaved, but it's no longer enough by the traditional ways. So nowadays, romanticism is added to that. Yeah, I get that point. It's true, romanticism is a way of denying women their full space in society and erase them somehow and to control them. And yeah, but continuing, romanticism develops in proportion to the liberation of women from their biology. As civilization advances and the biological basis of sex class crumble, male supremacy must shore itself up with artificial institutions or exaggerations of previous institutions, e.g. where previously the family had a loose permeable form, it now tightens and rigidifies into the patriarchal nuclear family. So earlier, when humans were living together in larger groups, there was not that nuclear family like today, but nowadays it's tightened in this modern age. There's really this four-person family, or just family with mother, father, and children, and this is one unit, so private and separate from everything else in society. So it's basic cell, but this didn't exist early in human history. And yeah, it's male supremacy, she says here, shoring itself up with artificial institutions. Or where formerly women had been held openly in contempt, now they are elevated to states of mock worship. Hmm. Romanticism is a culture tool of male power to keep women from knowing their conditions. It is especially needed and therefore strongest in Western countries with the highest rate of industrialization. Today, with technology enabling women to break out of their roles for good, it was a near miss in the early 20th century. Romanticism is at an all-time high. How does romanticism work as a cultural tool to reinforce sex class? Let us examine its components, refined over centuries, and the modern methods of its diffusion. Cultural techniques so sophisticated and penetrating that even men are damaged by them. Okay, so now she goes on to list those tendencies like eroticism. She states that virility and sexual performance become confused with social worth. This is very true, I think, for men. And for women also, to a certain degree, I think, but not as much. But this is great. Everything is channeled into genital sex. Let me read out that complete paragraph. Eroticism. A prime component of romanticism is eroticism. All animal needs the affection of a kitten that has never seen heat, for love and warmth are channeled into genital sex. People must never touch others of the same sex and may touch those of the opposite sex only when preparing for genital sexual encounter, a pass. So, but here a small critique. I'm just missing this point from her. What is her stance on polyamory? So the thing is, I totally understand her, and the problem is, for me as a man, to speak that barely about sex is dangerous, because a woman can attack, and should today, But I, as a man, don't want to reinforce the traditions of which are millennia old in human history, that men were always strong. But I think that on one hand she seems to accept monogamy and say it's the normal thing, when we remember what I read some minutes ago, that a man has a roving eye and can stay true to a girl she has to deny. But somehow a girl wishes that she should be really true and can cling together with this boy. And but on the other hand, now here she says, well, it should be normal to also touch other people outside a fixed relationship, and this is so absurd that this is forbidden, and only when it's about gentle sex and about this boyfriend and girlfriend love, only then you can touch someone of the opposite sex, and everything else is forbidden and crossed out, erased from daily life. So I think that that in her first remark, that she's always taking too much emphasis on the current state of affairs, and of course this world is formed by men, but as if this were totally non-transformable and was so rigid. But this goes, of course, totally to the opposite of Shulamith Firestone's message, that we need to overcome all this patriarchal system and need to organize politically. So I just don't understand this point earlier. I can't side note and don't want to go back in the pages, but that somehow she's always referring to that the man has his roving eye and can't deny he has lust for many girls, but a girl would only be happy to find one boy to stay with him forever. And this is so false, I think, and also sexist and denigrating towards women. But I think it has to do with what I explained, that we can't escape our own inner truth and our standpoint, and we all kind of look for sex and love. And also me, just look, people, I'm different than also she, than Shulamith, because she was a writer, a philosopher, and I feel I'm rather poet, maybe novelist, but maybe not even that. A poet is really easy, it's an easygoing life, you just wake up and you skip some time, you take some rhymes, and then you shine, it's like the sun, you boast, and you full of energy, it's floating, you're flooding the earth with the warmth of your words. And so simple. So all I'm saying is a poet's life is completely artificial. It's nothing to be felt there, at least not personally. You feel all the world, you feel like you're everyone. Walt Whitman is great, he writes about that. But it's not to be compared with the life of an individual that lives actually in the society. And this is so great, because I now feel this as my some French speakers. I feel this as my what is my job? What do you call this? Well, it's my work now to be a poet, because it's so easy, and despite I don't want to be part of this society, it would do me harm. So I'd rather fly and take my arms, like those are my words, those are fire, and through the curb, and English is better to rhyme, and this is all that that's there to recite. So this is just my point. I don't feel superior to women in general or to Shulamith. I just think that in my way of looking to love and sex right now, in this phase of my life, I think there's really nothing personal there, and I don't want it to be personal. It's just general. I just look at the world and the beautiful people I see, and I don't want to imagine anything. I just want to And I go back inside now to the hostel, talk to that girl maybe if she's still there, because, and yeah, invite her to the street fair. And this will be great, and not think about there and there, what should happen, what could be. No, I just want to love and feel free and feel like I'm developing, I'm grasping new insights, and this is me. So what I mean is, I don't need love. It's all of you that need it. And I'm trying to give you a hand and everything, but of course I also need it in the end, just in a different way, just not that directly. Maybe even need it more, but just that I can tease and can go on for a longer time without becoming so desperate and wanting to cry. No, I just can't go on and even go on and on and on talking, and even about past relationships. But let's go on walking through this text. So this is really a superb point, remark by Shulamith, that, yeah, it would be so nice to touch other people, but somehow this oppressive system forbids us and says, yeah, can only rub in their imagine to thrust your arm forward, to lay it on the other person. Only then, when it's really official and really this great thing, the love fling, the what sting that hit you, the ring called you, and the shingle that's all for you. Let's go on. Isolation from others makes people starved for physical affection, and if the only kind they can get is genital sex, that's soon what they crave. So this is so deep, right? This is what we crave, and this is what I think about this girl at the reception, or any girl, that, well, it's just not imaginable that you would just want a hug or just want a smile or a talk. No, when you go on walk, let walk your thoughts wildly and freely, like the running. It's a machine directed by society and all the things that already have been said. And then, of course, you think about genital sex and think like, this is the only thing that counts, and I have to get that. And of course, like Shulamith says, yeah, that is better than nothing. I mean, if you have only the choice to get that or nothing, of course it's genital sex. But this is not even the best you can get. I mean, this is so ridiculous to think of love and seduction and sensuality as only that. Like, I mean, come on, people. This is maybe the highest degree of it. Of course, this is where all of us are most excitable. And but this is truly not the only need. And it's so, so absurd to see it reduced to that in this liberal Western society. But moving on, in this state of hypersensitivity, the least sensual stimulus has an exaggerated effect, enough to inspire everything from schools of master painting to rock and roll. Thus, eroticism is the concentration of sexuality, often into highly charged objects, gently laced, signifying the displacement of other social affection needs onto gentle sex. To be plain old needy for affection makes one a drip. To need a kiss is embarrassing, unless it is an erotic kiss. Only sex is okay. In fact, it proves one's mettle. Virility and sexual performance become confused with social worth. So sex here is So sex, it has these beautiful little signs put around it. I don't want to deny it, missing the words here, I'm getting a little tired. No, but it's called in German, it's an Anführungszeichen, and in Spanish it's entre comillas, and here it's an apostrophe. Yeah, write that. And this is so settled by Shulamith because, yeah, because it's so dumb by society to think that they think penetration and this, well, utilization of the genitals, of the sexual organs, that is the only thing that's sex. But this is so wrong. And what's also sex is just a nice look, a nice talk, and a nice hug. And there's nothing that could differentiate that from the act of also employing your sexual organs. Of course, there's other consequences. You can get pregnant and get children. But this is not what it's about at this level. It's about the social, the human feeling, the psychological, and the individual needing. And it's exactly that. Sex is all of that, and not just this narrow space what the stupid society thinks should be or could be or must be sex. So, but let me stop here reading. It's getting a little tiring, although this text is so great. I just can't get enough of it. And especially because I feel there's something wrong with it, something deeply wrong, but it also has to be that way. If you write about sex and love, can't be right about everything, not about the main picture, maybe even. But it's just an adventure that needs a lot of courage to embark upon. To speak and write about this, not from my part now. I'm used to it by now. Yeah, some years ago, maybe it was something that I tried out and that I found. I had to find some bravery to get that. But now, what I mean is by shooting with Firestone, published this book at a very young age, when only 25, I guess. So that's truly, truly a remarkable achievement by her, and I can't stop reading and can't believe all the things that I see there. And yeah, but people, so the original idea for my podcast now that I'm here was that I do a nice little podcast in the morning and then I start going on adorning my day, going to the street fair, the comrades. But I wanted to read out one of my own texts. And text is so beautiful, it rhymes with sex, right? But what I feel now, oof, I'm rather tired. Maybe I should stop that, and probably, yeah, that's that. But oh, look at that. I'm here in this beautiful garden, and yeah, so to be brutally honest, I was thinking about reading out my poem to Lana Del Rey today. But I think it's great that I already exhausted myself now, and we don't get to that now, because I want to tease you and whoever's listening, you know. There's something about Lana. If you look at Lana Del Rey, I think what she's saying with her looks and appearance is that, yeah, all of that was also in that book by Shulamith, that a woman is somehow hooked by the male desire and is put under fire to be perfect. You can't deny that she wants that, to be persecuted by men, to be looked at, to be stared. And but she plays with that and can say that, well, yeah, I can play that on that weak little feminine figure that's all out in the open for your male litter, well, for the way you're looking at us. And what's there to say about crushing those tacks, those you're thinking about facts, yeah. But no, it's not that. It's that there's a certain playfulness in Lana's behavior and appearance, and you know that she belongs to a different generation of women than when Shulamith Firestone grew up. Things have changed a little, I guess, but not that much. But still, it allows at least, and this is great for people like Lana, to be free in that and to express feminine desire and voluptuousness and even, yeah, sexiness, even wanting to be attractive for men. I mean, she's so much styling up herself with her short skirts and everything, but also just expressing her own lust for men in her songs and everything, with her looks. And this is it. When I saw a picture of her walking down the streets in New York, she was coming out of the apartment of her boyfriend, and yeah, sorry, shouldn't dig into these private stories, but I just stumbled over it on the internet on some fan page, because I have to do a lot of research to be writing about her, whatever I'm writing, my poetry. I'm igniting it slowly. So, and then I thought, this was some 10 years ago, this picture. There was his boyfriend saying goodbye, and it was like an uneasy goodbye by the looks on his face. It felt like, oh man, they're splitting ways, parting ways. So Lana's going out there, and yeah, she has her short skirt, and she's looking around her. She's probably 2014 already seen. Yeah, there are lots of paparazzis all over the scene, so... So she knows she's getting observed, and what lies in her face and in her looks is that, oh yeah, I know I'm a woman, and I just am crap. Just crawled out of the bed or of the apartment of my latest lover, of my boyfriend. Oh, and exactly, that's that. That for a woman, this could have something unpleasant to be thought of as a sexual being, but not for Lana. She's somehow reluctant. She's double-edged. On the one hand, yeah, it's seeing like, yeah, she's embarrassed a little, but she's only playing and feeling like, well, what are you all saying? She's asking with her face, isn't it great to have sex? And isn't it that what we all look for? And yeah, so I should be proud and even brag about how I took down this man and how I had him in my arms and shook his body, bit him. And yeah, his legs, put them around me or somehow. It's a frown. You know, it's not always the traditional way. So it's what I say. And with that, but I want to go even further. Maybe not today, I just say, for a woman, I guess it's easy to feel that you're inferior to men, that you're weaker, and therefore you want to feel that every time something nasty happens to you or something, you feel treated unfairly, you always want to crawl back to your female identity and feel that is the reason for it all, that that you're a girl, and that is that big reason that's defining your world. But it's not like that, dear girls. Just look at that. I know it's hard, but in the end, I think we can start to push this a little further to the brink and to make real art between, yeah, women and men, and that the difference is something beautiful, and it's not all about equality, at least not every time. You know, the fight for equality had its reign, had its reasons and its necessity in a different age, and this is like the fight for freedom, which was freeing us from the burden of kings and of demons, all these tyrants. But nowadays freedom has become reactionary. And I think in the same way, in sex relationships, equality has become reactionary, and we just should start and try very hard to acknowledge the differences between genders and just say, maybe there's some things that are harder for you girls, with all of your splendor. It's still hard when you're starting to go out in this world all alone, and it's normal that you feel alone and like you don't know. But dear girls, you just have to go on, move on, and it's nothing wrong. Everything you try will be fine, and will not love about you or ridicule you. We just want to love you, but in a way that's fair. And I don't know how that can be in the air. How we can spare ourselves from these demons and slates or the rattles of tradition and history since we were apes. Exactly, that's what Shulamith referred to, right? This animal instincts and warmth and everything. So I think with that said, it's all good. I feel I'm in the wood. Birds sing here. Wow. So let me bring this sheer outpost to the podcast feed, to my outro. Maybe it's all gonna stroll through the internet. And look how these birds fly. And they have their feathers. They also die like us, right? They are made out of matter, like all of us. And with that, I don't want to splatter any more words. I feel it's better to stop when it hurts and say, yeah, it hurts now to not know when I go down there to the reception if I will be able to be stepping up to my manlyhood. But with that final word of insecurity and just feeling shaken, I can say that it's been a baking day. Thanks for listening, and you can shake my hands if you come to the street fair there in Berlin, at the Franz Mehring Platz, from the DKP, the German Communist Party. And yeah, let's have fun there and say smarty. Yeah, bye bye, and take care of all of your possessions and of your thoughts, and yeah, bye bye.